Well, we're not very good Hindus here. In other words, Hinduism is a generic or general term that can cover anything that happens on the Indian subcontinent. From the Himalaya mountains on south. But a more precise term is that we are followers of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Dharma, the Dharma of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the more accurate term. Also known as Sanatan Dharma, the Eternal Dharma. The Eternal Dharma is based on your eternal essence. If you don't know what your eternal essence is, how can you know what eternal dharma is? As so many of you know, dharma is not precisely translated into English as religion. At its deepest level, dharma means that part of you that never changes. Now, how are you going to arrange your life? How are you going to manage your lifestyle and have life goals, if you don't know what is it about you that doesn't change? Once you find out that part of you that doesn't change, then you can begin to understand things you should be doing that should never change. So all this kind of thinking leads to Sanatan Dharma. The things that you do eternally, no matter what kind of body you're in, no matter where you're born, no matter what planet you're born on, there are things that you always do. What is that one thing you always do, no matter what kind of body you take, no matter what planet you're born on, no matter what your circumstances that you're in? What's that one thing that you'll always do? You will always render service. At every moment, you're serving. That's kind of a hard point for contemporary people to understand, because in their minds, they imagine their masters, their controllers. But it's very humbling to have to think that you are a servant at every moment. Why is it so hard for people to see that? It seems so obvious. But because there's so much propaganda in which people are made to think that they are free and independent, they have a hard time seeing reality. I'm sure you've had the experience of losing something. You can't find it. It's right before your eyes, but you can't see it. Similarly, the facts of existence, that you are always a servant. These facts are right before your eyes. But because the mind is so full of this delusion that I am the captain of my ship, I'm the master of my fate. People can't see that at every moment they are simply a servant. If you want to make a thorough analysis of your life, just take one day. Like tomorrow. Just keep a pad of paper and a pen and write down all the different ways you're serving. And you'll see. From the moment you wake up, you brush your teeth, you're serving your teeth. And the toothpaste you put on the toothbrush, you're serving that toothpaste company. You're serving your body. All day long, you'll see you're doing nothing but serving the body and mind, serving your senses. And then, you're serving others. If you have a family or a partner, you're serving that person. Wife, husband, child. You're rendering service. When you go to work, you go to school, you're serving there. Even when you go to purchase something, you have to pay your GST to render service. You can't find a single moment in which you're not serving. So that is your eternal characteristic that never changes, even though the body changes. Since that is your eternal characteristic, you should think, what is the best kind of service to do, since you can't escape from doing service? Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that the best kind of service is what's natural to you. You are the spirit soul, part of Krishna, the Supreme Soul, and natural behavior for you is to serve the Supreme Soul. The problem is that within this material energy, we are deluded. We rebel against Krishna and we serve matter. We serve our temporary material mind and senses. And that way we think we're going to be happy. We even think we are the lords, the controllers, the enjoyers, when actually we're simply the humble servant of our mind and senses, which are never satisfied. Isn't it a fact? Never satisfied. How many years have you tried?
20.
20 years you tried, since you're a little baby. I'm going to enjoy. So what are your conclusions after 20 years of this quest?
It's very good. It doesn't work. I wouldn't recommend it.
What are your conclusions after how many years of this quest?
23.
So what did you find?
The more you try to satisfy them, the more they want, the more and more. It's like, you know, it's like when, as Prabhupada says, when you itchy, the more you scratch, the more you want to scratch. It's just better not to serve.
So what is your solution?
I'm trying to find it. I haven't found it.
You haven't found a solution?
I mean, I'm finding it with Krishna consciousness. I haven't reached the ultimate solution. I'm still trying.
How do you think you're going to reach the ultimate solution?
By taking advice from advanced devotees like
you. More than taking advice, you have to take the medical prescription. Are you ready to do that?
Yes.
Okay. What do you think,
Dave? Yeah, I agree. The more you try, these are senses, the more they desire. There's nowhere they won't go, and there's no limit to their expectations.
So how are you going to deal with that?
Well, you've got to step off that hedonic treadmill of trying to get the next thing.
But isn't that easier said than done?
Yeah, it is easier said than done.
So how do you plan to accomplish, do this mission impossible, apparently?
By engaging that serving propensity.
Oh.
Something that's transcendental that won't bind you to this material.
It's a very interesting point that he's brought up. Non-binding activity. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, all right, material activities bind you to the material world. They create reactions. Reactions aren't an innocent thing. They mean that you are caught. You're stuck. You're bound. The solution is non-binding activity, non-karmic work. That is bhakti yoga. That's why devotees have this sense of freedom. Because the activities that a devotee of Krishna performs are non-binding. Just think about that concept of non-binding activity. Just think of the disaster of performing activities that simply bind you, imprison you. You're thinking you're working, you're studying, you're taking on so many relationships and responsibilities to make your mark in this world, to show your prowess. But all we're doing is tying ourselves up in knots. Reactions. How are we going to cope with this situation? That's the question an intelligent person asks. Is this my real nature, to be performing work or activity that just binds me to material existence? What would you say? Yes. You ever wonder about these things?
Yeah. I don't really have a strong opinion.
Well, but you wondered about them, yes?
I've been wondering about them. Well, some material things can degrade in a way.
Like what?
I've got a really good bush bike, and that's my, I guess, my method of riding out to the bush and going camping if I want to. It's a freeing exercise.
But who pays the toll to nature for your riding out to the bush?
It's pretty environmentally friendly.
But you're riding on nature. You're consuming air, oxygen. Who pays the toll?
It's the environment. In that sense, it'd always be a toll to the environment, regardless of what you do with it.
No. If you are living as directed by the source of the environment, then you can act in such a way that there's no reaction, there's no bind. You get home toll free. But if you are disconnected from the ultimate source, from Krishna, then here you are thinking you're just innocently riding out to the bush, but you're accumulating karma. You're using someone else's property without inquiring what are the terms of that usage. You haven't read the user's guide. So that's a good example you've given. Here you are innocently on your push bike heading to the bush for camping. Liberating, freeing, non-binding. But no, you're accumulating karma. Now, the Vedic texts will explain to you that such karma that you're getting is nowhere near as severe as someone, you know, riding to work at a slaughterhouse or gambling casino or something like that. But still, unless we find out the terms of existence and harmonize ourselves with those terms of existence, unless we connect ourselves in knowledge with the supreme source of everything, with Krishna, we get reactions. We have to pay the price. There's no free lunches in this world. But somehow that we've got that in our mind, that I can just follow my whims, follow my interests, and everything will be all right. Has anyone ever instructed you, for every action is a reaction, be careful what you do. Find out what are the reactions to all the possible actions you can do. Yeah? Who has told you that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyone told you?
I guess I learned in an ethics class about utilitarian ethics that it's always greater good for the greatest number, and whatever action you take, there's always going to be some negative consequence, but it would be the matter of getting the largest positive consequence.
How are you going to do that? What's the greatest good for the greatest number of people?
I guess you got to find your little niche and go for it.
Find your own little niche.
Such as Fred Hollows, he was an optometrist. He found his little niche of curing people's eyes in third world countries, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that would have some negative consequence, but have also a lot of positive consequence. Mm-hmm. So,
is that the greatest good you can do for the greatest number of people?
Perhaps that was uniquely his.
Yeah. But you've raised a very interesting point. How to do the greatest good for the greatest number of people? You have to find out, first of all, who the people really are. Just like suppose I said, here, I'm going to do the greatest good for the greatest number of jumpers in this room. What would you say?
I'd say jumpers is your passion, but...
I'm going to do the greatest good for the greatest number of jumpers in this room.
Perhaps you're missing something. Perhaps you could,
yeah.
You could do the greatest good for the source of the jumpers, or those who wear the jumpers. Perhaps.
Okay, good point. Very good point. Now, who is wearing the jumper?
The person, the individual.
If I ask you, for example, who is wearing the jumper? Or you have a shirt on, I can't see, but... Who's wearing the striped... Oh. What is it? It's a...
Oh. Who am I?
No. Yeah. We won't get that far yet. Who's wearing... What do you have on?
I'm a... Just... All-star... State League.
All right, some kind of shirt. Hooded shirt. All right, so who's wearing it? Very good. Yeah, we got that far. Now, who is me?
So I think to define me is to sort of tell you about my characteristics or my behaviors or what
but
I do.
But who has the characteristics or behavior? Like you said, my characteristics, my behavior. Who is the one with the characteristics and behavior?
The silent observer.
The silent observer. Okay. And pray tell, who is that?
So it gets pretty sort of metaphysical, perhaps beyond description. I can say I, maybe the me or the I is my own interpretation of myself. Perhaps it's a thought process.
What is the me or I composed of? It's like the shirt you're wearing is composed of synthetics or cotton or something like that.
A set of perspectives.
Huh? Well, who has the perspectives?
I think I've had this one before and I didn't really get anywhere
with it. Why not? If we can't get anywhere with this, then things are pretty hopeless. We don't know anything then. We're lost.
I've seen some movies where they ask this question and they just get frustrated. But you can never really get to the actual core. It's always just something you just go around
circles. Why? Why go around circles? Ultimately, the question is, is your core identity material or spiritual?
I'd like to say it's spiritual.
Okay. Then, if our core identity is spiritual, why are we trying to please ourselves materially?
Maybe it's maybe we need to please both.
Well, are you matter or spirit? That's your core identity. You said you're spirit, so why then try to please both?
I'm spirit. I think I'm spirit sort of encased in something physical or something matter.
Alright, just like now you're wearing that shirt, so should you try to please your shirt as well as yourself?
The shirt's pleasing me by keeping me warm.
But are you pleasing the shirt? You're both, you know, the self, whatever that is, and your shirt. So how are you living your life to please your shirt?
Maybe the shirt doesn't need pleasing because it doesn't have a soul.
Okay, then how do you please a soul?
Give it a shirt.
Well, the soul needs a shirt to please it. Good job. No, you're doing very well. Good. Keep up. So the question is, how to please the soul? The soul is only pleased by spiritual methods, non-material methods. And if indeed, as you say, you are the soul, your core identity is spiritual, that means that only spiritual pleasure will satisfy you.
But that's not to say that if you're hungry, food will satisfy you.
What does the food satisfy?
Your
body. Right. But you just said you're not the body. Your core identity is spiritual.
True. I like to think the body counts.
Huh?
I like to think the body counts.
Well, I mean, just I like to think my clothes count also. They're not me. They're not everything. But they, you know, they're something. It's like your shirt counts for something. But it's not you. Right?
Yeah,
Okay. So once we understand that we have a core spiritual identity, the next thing is, what are the spiritual methods to please that core spiritual identity? Matter can't satisfy you. Have you tried satisfying yourself with matter?
No, I've tried, yeah.
And what happened?
I get there occasionally.
Get where?
Sort of like a semi-satisfied state.
Semi-satisfied. No, we're talking about full satisfaction that doesn't end.
It's like I've reached some pretty elated states, but they're pretty temporary.
Temporary. Ooh, that's a problem, isn't it?
You pretty quickly go back into your frustrated state.
That's awesome.
Being there, probably. Yeah.
What did you do to get to these semi-satisfied states?
Soccer club won the grand final. That was pretty.
What's that?
I used to play soccer under 10s, and our team won.
Uh-huh.
That was pretty satisfying.
For how long?
An hour and a half.
We won.
Yeah.
Everyone was cheering.
Yeah.
All the girls were looking at you.
At 10, sort of.
That's a lot for a young guy, isn't it? Paradise. And then there was the party afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Everyone got wasted, right?
Coke and Red Cordial.
Coke and what?
Red Cordial.
Oh, no alcohol?
No, I'm 10.
Oh, you're only 10 years old?
Yeah.
Oh. Give me a couple more years. Or you break out the slabs, you know?
Yeah. That was pretty satisfying. That was sort of, I know, quite a complete state, I like to say.
For an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So is it worth it to live our whole life just for that temporary satisfaction? An hour and a half of peak feeling?
That's what most people do.
Ah, but is that what you're going to do? Huh?
Perhaps.
Come on, you must be meant for better than that.
Maybe a turning point situation.
Ah, maybe a turning point. Very good. David, what do you think he would have to do to make it through the turning point?
Probably get a taste of how you would experience a pleasure that is not dependent upon external circumstances.
Sounds interesting, doesn't it? Can you see yourself in his shoes?
Yeah.
He knows something. Not everything he should know, but he knows something, and he's groping in the right direction. What do you think he should do next? What would you do? What would you do if you were in his shoes?
I'd probably continue the line of inquiry, and I would probably say to you, so what do you propose then? What is this?
What do I propose?
You know, you're making these statements about spiritual pleasure, so please elaborate so that I can get a sample of this.
Spiritual pleasure or Krishna consciousness comes when you connect to the Supreme, when you connect to Krishna, the source of all the pleasure. Otherwise, on your own, how much pleasure can you really manufacture for yourself on your own? Huh? Yeah, how much?
Without aiming for the spirit in such a way, if you sort of turn your... if you direct all your energy into something which you think is ethical, such as a couple of weeks ago I did a kids camp.
Very nice.
Kids with autism, Asperger's, ADD, ODD, CD, ADHD. And for a week we put in, everyone in the group, all us leaders, put a lot of energy into these kids, just sort of helping them have fun for a week.
Okay.
And that was pretty satisfying.
Pretty satisfying. You always, I like the way you always qualify it. Semi-satisfying. Pretty satisfying. Yes.
7.5 hours.
Yeah, it's about as good as it gets in this world, huh?
So, yeah, that's, for a lot of people, that's enough.
Is it enough for you?
Maybe.
Nah, it's not.
If I was to keep aiming in that sort of direction rather than, I don't know, becoming a car salesman, perhaps.
Yeah. All right, it's nice to help kids at camp, but how much are you really helping them? Have you helped them to understand who they are?
Maybe to some degree. Not spiritually, but psychologically.
Externally. Have you helped them to understand who their real identity is? That's the real help.
No,
yeah, that's the problem. And therefore, they'll never really be satisfied.
They'll laugh and smile.
Huh?
They'll laugh and smile.
Temporarily. And, you know, until the next problem comes.
That's something.
Yeah, that's the way this world is. Well, I did a little something. Isn't that enough? Why not recognize there's something that can be done? Just think of the heaps of problems these kids have. They don't know who they are. They don't know why they're in this world. No one can explain that to them. They're being bombarded with, you know, consumer impulses, filled with so many artificial goals. They never have time to have a discussion like we're having, and no one's motivating them to do that. So how can they really be happy? How can they really be successful?
Maybe the pursuit itself, even though they're not always going to be happy, the pursuit could be meaningful, but they're aiming for something, and even though happiness is there, just the process of getting there could be enough.
Getting where?
Wherever they think happiness is for a while.
Wherever they think happiness. No, if you really want to help people, you've got to do better than that. Otherwise, it gets all kind of nebulous, you know? It gets all kind of vague. That's why here we're teaching the science of the soul and the science of spiritual pleasure. Otherwise, people don't know. So you need to decide, am I this body or am I something else? If you're something else from the body, then how is that something else going to experience pleasure? You never start scratching your head and thinking, how's my shirt going to feel pleasure? How's my shirt going to enjoy? But we will think, how is the body going to enjoy? How's the body going to feel pleasure, right? Just like when this weekend comes, what's going to happen? Huh? Tell us. When the weekend comes.
Big party on Friday night.
Big party on Friday night. What's going to happen at the party?
Alcohol.
Alcohol for the soul, right? Alcohol. Only alcohol?
Boys, girls.
What? Just alcohol. No herbal supplements?
They'll probably be there, but not.
Okay.
I haven't touched on that yet.
No. Yeah.
Not much.
Ecstasy in pill form?
Yeah.
And the guys and girls will be there? Will they be discussing what is their real identity? What will they be doing?
Discussing their real physical identity.
How?
Yeah, that's.
What do you see yourself doing tomorrow night at the party?
Literally, or?
Yeah!
Okay, I'll probably go there, hang out with some friends, talk a lot of stuff, have a few drinks, probably end up going out.
Going out after the party?
Yeah.
To where?
Nightclubs.
Oh, and what do you do there?
Dance and continue drinking.
Yeah, and then?
Then you get over it and go home and sleep. And
go home alone?
Oh. Unless you're lucky.
Lucky for what?
I don't want to spell it out.
Yeah! Educate us, please.
I know, it's
people are probably mature enough to
understand.
Understand, yeah.
So, in other words, the hope is that you'll latch on to something.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. You could consider it attachment.
And if you don't latch on to something, then, well, you just go home alone and sleep it off, huh?
Basically, yeah.
But if you latch on to something, then what?
Well, then you're scored. That's
scored.
The score is complete within itself, perhaps.
Yeah. So you're at the party, and you try to latch on to someone, whether you know them or not before, right?
Typically you know them a bit before.
You know them a bit before.
Yeah.
And so everyone gets sufficiently drunk and then they lose all their inhibitions if they had any, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
And then what do? You kind of say, hey, no, you just go to my place.
Well, you're a bit more sort of tactical and smooth than that.
Oh, like, get down.
So you got to work at a steady gradient.
So what's the punchline?
I can give you a list of pickup lines.
Yeah.
I think I should.
Yeah. It's interesting. This is, you know.
I can't think of anything that's like appropriate to say.
Yeah, we're having a real for real discussion.
Serious, yeah? Okay, this is one that only works if a girl's got a sense of humor.
Okay.
Often they'll sort of just look at you and walk away, but when pickup lines aren't serious, they're more just a humorous thing. You break the ice, then you start chatting to them.
Okay, and what do you say? What's the punchline?
What you say is, did you just fart? And they'll say, no. And you say, you just blew me away. Like I said, if I got a sense of humor, then you sort of.
Okay.
Opens the door, otherwise it
closes. Okay, opens the door. And then.
But I'm actually not that experienced, maybe. I'm going to ask her about this.
No, but still, you know. Come on, tomorrow's Friday. You got to sharpen your skills.
Tomorrow's Thursday.
Yeah. 2 days to sharpen your skills. We're helping you.
I don't know if you'd be the best teacher in this field.
I agree. But still, it's interesting to hear how the living entity is going about pursuing, you know, temporary pleasure.
Like, the pursuit itself is quite happy as well. Like, it's meaningful, or perhaps not meaningful, but I think just in the pursuit, there's quite a bit of happiness in it, as well as the score in the end.
It's like a hunt, right?
Yeah, like, the chase is better than the catch. Like, just chasing. Yeah. I mean, it's a temporary thing at the end. The chase itself can be pretty good.
So, what do you say when you're closing in for the kill?
I don't know, it's sort of. I don't know specifically the words. I think a lot of it's in the body language. I know.
You start nudging closer.
So if the girl enters your personal space, the hair flicks, the revealing the shoulder, the revealing the neck, the wrists, the.
You've got science. I've
read a lot of body language.
So you watch for that, huh?
Yeah.
You really studied this.
You're sort of chatting, this sort of chat has like a sexual theme to it. As you're talking, you sort of get closer and then, you know, it comes the arms around each other and then it sort of, then it becomes the whole, you know, well, do you want to come back to my place? Usually I'll let them pop the question, so.
All right. And so, then you feel fulfilled.
Yeah, I'd say so. Well, it's exciting. What?
Now, what happened to your spiritual goals?
Spiritual goals run on a parallel.
A parallel? Are you sure? Or in opposition? You're thinking about that one.
It
psychologically, I think it's a phase that a lot of guys have to go through.
Why? Why do they have to go through that?
Because if you don't, then usually you become fixated.
Fixated meaning?
I'm not sure, I'm just thinking of the people that haven't gone through that phase, they get to 40 and they look back and they think they've missed out on something.
Are you sure?
Just thinking of the Catholic priest, maybe. That's probably a bad example. But
It's actually only a small percentage of them who,
exactly.
Have problems, you know.
But perhaps if
the media likes to play it up like it's all of them, it's actually just like less than 5%, you know.
Yeah, but it's something, perhaps if it's something that you don't go through, then you sort of have to come back to it.
Why?
Becomes an unhealthy thing.
Maybe there could be a higher taste.
Perhaps, maybe I haven't been.
Yes! Very good.
Acquainted.
Yes! So the whole point of genuine spiritual life is to acquaint you with that higher taste that would make you, just look at what you just described and say, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe it's a push from society.
Maybe
it's something that society drives us to do.
Yeah, so you got to rebel against that. Be a hero. Don't let your senses just push you over, you know?
Okay, hero status amongst your friends.
Do your friends know what they're doing in life?
Relatively.
What, do they know who they are? If they don't know who they are, how do they know what they're doing?
I mean, relative to their goals and values, maybe they know who they are, but perhaps not relative to their soul.
Well, I mean, a thinking person like you should want to go for the deepest knowledge, the deepest awareness. But you can't do that amongst persons who don't care about that. You become like who you associate with.
True.
So you're trying to be a thinking guy, except on Fridays and Saturdays. So if you hang out with those kind of people, you'll never be able to think straight.
Well, not spiritually.
Well, that's what it's all about. What would happen if you told your friends, forget the party Friday night, I'm going to be on a spiritual quest trying to understand who I am and what I should be doing. I say, wow, you got crazy. Right?
Yeah.
Would you have the strength to do that?
I think it would come down to incentive.
Incentive.
If I had enough incentive to really, let's say, let go of that group of friends because I don't like what they stand for and I don't like where they're leading me, and to say, find a more spiritual network of people, perhaps then I'll have the courage to do it.
Great. I agree 100%.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to provide here, is a network of spiritual inspiration so that persons like you can actually rise to the higher taste, rise to the superior pleasure. Most persons don't care. It's a fact. Most persons don't care. Just give me some temporary pleasure and leave it at that. They define life in terms of some temporary thrills. Just like what you were describing, the thrill of the hunt. And maybe there could be some reactions to that behavior. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. Well, I think if you live that lifestyle, very, very often you do the wrong thing, you pick up the wrong person,
Pick up the wrong person? How do you mean?
Well, they might be attached to some of your friends, or they might be, one of your friends might have been pursuing that person, or they may have had a girlfriend, or I don't know,
it's complicated.
It's complicated, yeah. If you want to live that lifestyle, you've got to tread very carefully, or else there's very profound and direct consequences.
But maybe you're actually violating nature's laws.
Maybe, but rabbits do it.
Okay, that's a good point.
Dolphins.
Animals do it. So that means human beings are no better than animals who act like that, right?
Dolphins do it.
What you're saying is animals act like that, so why shouldn't humans act like that?
Yeah.
That means humans are animals.
Yeah.
You think that?
If we're animals, yeah.
But what about the developed consciousness of a human being?
If that's what might make us unique amongst other animals.
So what are we going to do with that uniqueness? If it's simply squandered, trying for things that the animals get so easily, what's the use?
Maybe it's a matter of pursuing what we can with our evolved consciousness, but at the same time not denying our animal drives.
you really like those animal drives, don't you?
I don't speak for all of us.
Really?
Maybe not so much this room.
You're right. How many of you here like your animal drives? Raise your hand. Two. You see, this human form of life has the unique gift of developed consciousness. That's meant for understanding who you are. What is the Supreme? What is the relationship between you and the Supreme? If you neglect that use of your human intelligence, then yes, you have animal life. I agree. Do you ever have a feeling that you're meant for something more in life?
I think we all do, yeah, for sure.
Oh, not everyone. No. You're meant for more than the ordinary?
Innately, I think we all feel special.
That's true, but I'm saying, do you ever get the feeling you're meant for something beyond the ordinary way of living, the ordinary way of getting pleasure?
I'd like to think so, for sure.
Yeah, okay. Well, you should pursue that.
Yeah. Perhaps this is a stepping stone. Maybe I need to see what everyone else is pursuing first. And see if there actually is any happiness there.
I would recommend a thorough education, a thorough spiritual education in Krishna consciousness. Once you are educated, then you can understand. But without education, what can you know? Without education, it's very easy to be cheated. So what we're trying to do here is educate people in the deepest, most practical spiritual knowledge. That knowledge taught by Krishna himself. There's no one who's more an expert at pleasure than Krishna, because Krishna is the source of all pleasure. He's the supreme yogi. He's the eternal enjoyer. Now, you were describing the Friday night hunt. Can you see yourself doing that at, 60 or 70 years old?
Like I said, I think it's something that it comes at an age. It's a stepping stone that you need to go through.
But while you're stepping on those stones, there could be reactions.
You step carefully.
No, you could be putting yourself deeper into illusion. You could be piling up bad karma for yourself. Yeah. Nothing is free in this world.
I think I'm pretty good at sort of seeing the cause and effect of my actions.
How far can you see that?
Well, I know when I've been disorganized for people and people are disorganized for me, I'll sort of make that connection.
But still, you don't see all the possible reactions to your actions.
I think that would be beyond what we could sort of...
That's why we need help from Krishna, because we can't see everything with our limited senses. We need to see the user's guide, which explains all these things. For many of the persons who are from India listening, this sounds quite exotic, but the fact is, yeah, if they continue living in Australia, their kids will go through all this. And even in India, it's happening in the big cities, Mumbai, Delhi, This kind of thinking is becoming more and more prevalent. So whether you raise your kids here or raise them in India, they're going to have to deal with this propaganda throughout the whole world. So they're a little astonished by all this life. In India, if you're going to do something like that, you just sweep it under the rug. Here in Australia, it's right out front in the open. You got no need to hide it, right? Because we have this desire to enjoy, we do things. But we don't know who we are, and therefore we don't know what we should be doing. And by engaging in these activities of sense gratification, we increase the ignorance in our life. We're dulling our brains, literally. Just like when you're in the midst of your Friday and Saturday night dramas, you're not thinking about, you know, the deep questions of life. You're just losing yourself in temporary sensations, right?
I think some people would enjoy that.
But that's animal life.
Well, they enjoy the ignorance of it.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, perhaps.
For fools. But not everyone wants to be a fool. So I recommend that you participate more in our Krishna conscious efforts here, and you could be onto something big. How did you find your way here tonight?
How did I
come?
I was recommended.
Is that Sundini Shakti back there?
Yes, that's it.
Oh, yes. It's a very special person. So you were attracted by her radiant spiritual energy.
I was attracted by the idea of it, I guess, a new experience. Plus, I think I've always had a drive to become more spiritual.
Very good, very good.
Whenever an opportunity presents itself, I tend to take it.
But someone like her won't be at the Friday night parties.
Yeah. Yeah, I acknowledge that, yeah.
Yeah. Giving the body language and
yeah, too much.
Sipping the alcohol, you would never find her there. Why wouldn't you find her there?
Because she's devoted her life to a higher purpose.
Higher purpose means higher pleasure.
Maybe.
Yes.
Maybe I have to experience it.
Exactly. Fair enough. The proof of the pudding is in the taste.
Yeah.
Okay. So come and taste. Krishna consciousness will develop your spiritual senses. You'll be able to verify for yourself your spiritual existence and the spiritual reality. Well, thank you for that very stimulating discussion.
Yeah, no worries.
That was
good.
Yeah, it was. We talk like this all the time.
I guess you can't hide from the other side.
No.
It's definitely out there.
No. All right, what happens now?
We usually have like 10 minutes of Krishna, and then we move on for prasadam, for spiritual food. So.
Alright.
Would you like to lead a kirtan?